Hey, hey, people of Earth, it's time to enter the Spoilerverse via our secret portal at the exclusive Arctic Club in beautiful downtown Seattle with our hosts, John and Kenrick. Welcome to Spoiler Country.
Hey, if you're listening to our show for the first time and you're on one of the social medias that we're on, like Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, any of those kinds of things, you should always check us out on Spoilerverse.com. But if you want to keep up with our latest episodes, you should bring out your smartphone, get into your favorite podcatcher, find Spoiler Country, and hit subscribe. Then you'll get all our new stuff.
And if you want to reach out to us, you can do that in two ways. You can call us, leave us a voicemail at 707-656-2080. Again, 707-656-2080. Or you can shoot us an email at spoilercountry@gmail.com.
United Armies of the Spoilerverse, welcome back to Spoiler Country. I'm Kenneth Regan, that's Mr. Horsley, and today on the show, well, we have hip-hop legend from the Black Eyed Peas, Taboo, and his writing partner, Ben Jackendoff.
We do, and Melissa was lucky enough to take on this interview because neither one of us were available for it at the time it was happening, and man, it's a lot of fun.
I thought I was going to be available. I had it all set up to be available, and then I bought tickets for a light show back in on the 23rd and was like, oh, I am not available.
It happens. Things you promised the family home. To do. I was driving from my mom's house back to here because we had quarantined my mom, and so my kids were over at the mom's house. I had to pick them up.
Nice, nice. That's kind of nice you guys were able to do that.
Yeah, yeah. They quarantined for 2 weeks. We quarantined for 2 weeks. We were able to go see them on Christmas.
Yeah, that's cool. That's really cool. So Taboo and Ben are relaunching Werewolf by Night, and it has a Native American or First Nation kick to it. So who
Which
better?
I'm actually super excited about for this.
Me
man.
Too. It I'm super awesome. Excited. And who better than Taboo and Ben to do this?
Yeah. And if you listen to this today, which is Wednesday, December 30th, there's a brand new issue out to pick up today.
Yeah, there you go. There you go. Well, why don't we sit back and listen to Ben and Taboo with Melissa in their own words.
This is Spoiler Country, and I'm Melissa Sercha. Today on the show, I am beyond excited to chat with my next guest. Here to talk about their new comic book series, Werewolf by Night, I'd like to welcome producer and writer Benjamin Jackendoff and writer, actor, and rapper from the Black Eyed Peas, Taboo. Welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thank you.
Thanks for being here, guys. So we chatted
a pleasure.
Little. Yeah.
It's a pleasure to be on here. You know, when you guys reached out to me and I know we were trying to schedule the time to make this happen, but you know, I'm glad that it all aligned. We got a lot of great news for all the people that are listening, and we're just grateful to be on this journey in 2020 going into 2021.
Yeah, absolutely. There's a lot to be grateful for. We're all here, you know, we get to talk about comics and what we're all doing and hopefully bring some joy to people that are listening, get people excited about what you guys got coming out, what you have out now, what you're coming out with in the future. So yeah, I'm excited to, first of all, I want to know, how did you two end up working together and like, what's your collaborative creative process like?
Well, I will jump in on that. So we met at Comic-Con in 2017. Comic-Con has played a big part of our journey. Mine in particular too, you know, in my backstory before Tab and I met, you know, I've been very involved as a filmmaker and a storyteller. And I had been involved in the comic book business for a long time. And then Tab and I met at Comic-Con 2017 when we worked together on Masters of the Sun. And we just hit it off. We were just like, you know, you want to tell the story how I came in? I was like, we're rocking my Thrasher hoodie. Yeah, I mean, I came out, I'm like rocking my Thrasher hoodie, you know, all bleary eyed from the night before, just coming in, you know, from LA. And he's like, bro, you skate? And I was like, yeah, man, I totally do. And he was like, oh, man, it's like, yo. And we just started chopping it up. He was telling me about his toy collecting. I was telling him about my love of comic books. And, you know, we just geeked out. And then it just kind of grew from there. I mean, that was, you know, that was the beginning of our journey together, you know, and ultimately then we started talking about, hey man, we should find some stuff to do. I've been, you know, working here in LA for a long time, and animation has been really been connected deeply in the animation space. And a good friend of mine who was over at Cartoon Network was like, hey, you guys should come in and pitch Cartoon Network. And that was really what started us launching our company, Skyview Way, was us pitching Cartoon Network and setting up a project there. And then, you know, I mean, Tab, you mentioned that all started, you know.
So one of the things that Ben forgot to mention is that when we met at Comic-Con, I had on this Cheap Joseph shirt that represented, you know, like my culture and just something that I was passionate about. Just like I said, being a voice and wanting to do things in the indigenous space through a native lens, but making it inclusive to everyone so that everybody gets inspired by, you know, the storytelling and the different characters and ideas that we work to create in the future. So I remember telling Ben, like, yo, I want to do something in the native space. I want to have like native storytelling.
Yeah.
So that was the initial idea of what Skyview Way was to become. And, you know, my partnership with Marvel started many years prior to me meeting Ben and prior to us meeting in 2007. I had been building a relationship with vendors and different people at Comic-Con. And I just remember meeting this guy named Jason Bergman, who was a cosplayer. Mm-hmm. He introduced me to this chief editor. His name was Daniel Fink. And he worked at Marvel. I think he's still at Marvel. And he always asked me like, yo, do you have any ideas, anything that you want to do? And I said, no, actually, I don't have anything right now. Because I didn't want to just present something just for the sake of presenting something without even having the content fleshed out or what it was.
Right.
So I held on to that card. I made sure to use that bullet when it was right. And so I kept going back to Comic-Con, and I kept meeting more people from Marvel, like Jason Latorre. We did this thing called Becoming, which is a Marvel video where you become your favorite superhero. And I became my favorite superhero, which is Red Wolf. And Red Wolf was a Native American hero that nobody really talked about. But because I connected on a personal level, I felt like I wanted to champion this idea of a hero without a cape, which was Red Wolf. He represented, you know, the first Native American hero from Marvel. Mm-hmm. And that's something that I was trying to make sure that I got ahead of. And I wanted to be a part of that journey to build up this character. And so Ben and I started like ping-ponging on ideas for the meeting with Cartoon Network. We came up with some really cool stuff and we presented it to Cartoon Network. And throughout that time period, we had just every day started talking on the phone and coming up with different creative ideas, to the point where I remember getting a phone call from Marvel saying, hey, we would love for you to come to New York to do this show with Joe Quesada. And Joey Q became like a really cool friend of mine. And I kept telling him, dude, I want to do this thing, Red Wolf. And we kept talking about it. And I just kept pushing Red Wolf, right?
Yeah.
I just knew that as much as I was passionate about it, they would see that I can do something with this because I was invested in it and nobody was really championing the idea of Red Wolf the way I was. So fortunately and humbly, Joey Q told me, he said, you know what? It'll present itself. And when it does, it's going to be special for you. So fast forward, we get to the showroom because Jason Latorre is like, yo, you should come to the showroom. Well, I'll introduce you to everybody. So I got to meet CB, the chief editor, and I got to meet Tom Brever. And those guys like became, you know, instantly we started talking and I was like, yo, how can I write for Red Wolf? Or how can I be part of this Red Wolf journey? So I felt like a little gnat in their ear, ladies and gentlemen, because then Tom says, hey, Tab, we got this idea for this thing called Marvel 1000. Would you like to be part of this journey? Right. So I said, yes. They told me, pick a muse. I'm like, Red Wolf. So I jumped on that. Red Wolf was the first thing I said. And so we went back. I said, I got a partner named Ben and we're going to start ping-ponging on the idea. And so to make a long story short, we created Marvel 1000 with Jeffrey Varegi and our muse was Red Wolf. And we kind of based it around the Standing Rock movement because I was at Standing Rock and it was very personal to me. So, you know, it was like the whole concept was invisible no more, protect the sacred, right? And it was a good jump off point to our partnership with Marvel, but also with Jeffrey Varege, who's a Native American artist at Marvel. So then the next thing we started working on was this idea that Jake Thomas, our editor for this project, Werewolf by Night, he hit us up and he said, "Hey guys, we've got an opportunity to revamp Werewolf by Night, you know, the Jack Russell original that was from back in the day, but we want to give it a new, like a facelift, a new reimagination. Mm-hmm. We want to add it to the new world by adding new characters, but also making it through a native lens." So that's all he told us. And then he said to Ben and I, he said, "And just think of it as like, think of like Tommy Lee Jones and Harrison Ford in The Fugitive, and we'll throw in Red Wolf. You can have Red Wolf be part of this journey." So Ben and I started ping ponging on this idea because he said, "Sure, we got it." And then Benny, go ahead, take the rest.
Yeah, I mean, you know, just kind of picking up there. I mean, I think, you know, obviously being horror fans, but also looking at this as being fathers, you know, mm-hmm. both of us are fathers and having our kids. We said, look, you know, we really want to tell a story that our kids can love and that they can have heroes and mm-hmm. where, you know, again, we were like, okay, we've got a 17-year-old boy. Like they wanted to make him younger, make him a teenager. And I was like, well, what can we do with that? You know, and we didn't really want to lean into the original kind of European werewolf, where mm-hmm. it's very much about the curse, right, as opposed to looking at it from like more of it's a blessing and it can be a curse. It depends on how you, you know, as we put in the metaphor, what wolf you feed. That was mm-hmm. an issue one, you know, and we really kind of looked at that of like, how do we make an inspirational hero that is a native hero where every kid can look at that? And it's, you know, same with like, we were looking at Black Panther as like great jump off, you know, yeah. going like, wouldn't it be amazing to have a Werewolf by Night movie just like Black Panther? And, you know, and obviously Black Panther has been around for, you know, that character has been around for a very long time.
So, yeah, you have to. I mean, you really do. Yeah. I mean, if you're going to do it, like go big or go home, right?
Yeah. And the thing about this idea was to be able to pull from my personal experience so that we could implement a personal story going into conversation where it's like, it's not a native story. And I know when we hear native, we think like what has been put out in the past and stereotyping mm-hmm. and kind of like the whole idea of what Native American people are. And so we wanted to break that misconception and that whole stereotype. And so we made it more with heart, with family, where there's a grandma implemented, which, you know, mm-hmm. kind of derives from my own personal story. Jake's relationship with his best friend, which kind of derives from Benny's story. We also put my daughter, Jet Juliana, in the book as serving as Red Wolf's partner, a girl from Oklahoma. So, mm-hmm. you know, it kind of added this new feel, this new flavor to it, but more of a personal touch where it wasn't like so old school where you mm-hmm. get lost in a timepiece or a period piece. We wanted to modernize it. We added amazing villains that we created from scratch. It was inclusive because there were so many diverse and mosaic of characters that you know, anyone can be inspired by it. And it wasn't necessarily directed to one sector or to one demographic. We wanted to make it so that everyone, whether it was a young people or older people, can really gravitate to it. And we specifically made it so that there's no cuss words because we have okay. kids and we want our kids to appreciate, you know, the storytelling and our writing. So it just kind of lent itself to our mission statement of creating content that is edutainment. And we say it's educating, it's mm-hmm. it's educational, but it's also entertainment at the same time.
I like that. That's a cool play on words there. I've never heard that before. I like that.
There you go. You can use it now.
No, perfect.
Yeah,
no.
Bring it around.
No, I think it's really inspiring. You know, I've done my research. You've mentioned your grandmother and many articles, and I had a close relationship with mine as well. I'm first generation Sicilian, and you know, that culture stays with you even after they're gone. How big of an influence has she had on you in your life and in your creativity?
I mean, if it wasn't for my grandmother, I wouldn't be having this interview with you, because mm-hmm. I believe that everything is destined from when you find your aha moment. My aha moment was in my grandmother's living room at 5 years old. She was the one that pushed me when my mom and you know, my family was telling me to go to school and get an education. My grandmother's like, yes, I get that. But also, if you love to dance, follow your dreams. So, you know, my mom's very traditional and like, you know, you got to get a job, and which I did. I worked at Disneyland during the day, picking up horse manure during the electrical parade. And at night I performed with the Black Eyed Peas in 1995. So I was dealing with a lot of shit back then, metaphorically. Can I say that word?
Yeah, absolutely. No, it's a podcast. So you can let it go. Yeah.
So I let it go, man. I was working at Disneyland, but it was my grandmother that fueled my energy. She fueled my fire, my passion, my you know, the ability to dream beyond anything that was attainable, because I always shot for the stars, because my grandmother told me to shoot for the stars and go beyond what's at your grasp. Like, shoot bigger, think bigger, go bigger. Like you know how in skating or in BMX biking you go big air. That's exactly the mentality that my grandmother gave me. She gave me that energy, and like, I'm fearless when it comes to going after things that may seem uncomfortable or unpredictable. Like, I welcome those uncomfortable moments. And I always tell Benny this, like, yes, we can embrace the uncomfortable conversation. And like, even though I didn't start in the writer world as far as writing with Marvel, that was in my jump off. My jump off is Black Eyed Peas. Mm-hmm. It was a smooth transition because I'm already a storyteller through music.
Yeah.
So to be able to find someone like Ben, who his life has been this world, to be able to partner up with him, and he brings out the best of me, and I bring out the best of him. And then for me to listen and to learn from him, it's just been a blessing, man. He's like the ultimate teacher, coach, you know, player, teammate. He's all that, because I've learned so much from him because of his work that he's been doing in this space for a long time. And, you know, I kind of feel like I've built up his confidence too. And every day we build each other up. And it's because my grandmother gave me that essence of confidence, not arrogance, confidence. She built me up to be this way.
Yeah. No, I mean, look, I mean, jumping in real quick on that too. I mean, I think, you know, I have been working here in Hollywood for going on 20 years now, you know, and it's a long, I mean, look, you know, no one's an overnight success, you know, it takes time. And, you know, for us, I mean, I've gone, you know, and jumped from part, you know, look, any sort of creative thing, whether it's a marriage or whether it's a business creative partnership, they're exactly the same. Like, you have to have trust, you have to have faith in each other, and you have to dream big. Like, Tab and I always talk about that. Like, what do we want? Let's dream for the biggest things we can have. And we're just going to go after them. And like you said, it's fearless. And I think it's that confidence we give each other too. You know, I know myself, like, I mean, look, I've been a film editor. I've produced cartoons. I've produced movies, you know, and some of them, a lot of them suck. A lot of, you know, like, but it's always about the group of people you do it with. And, and I think that's really what it comes down to, you know? And I think, you know, speaking to that, like, I think, you know, when you are doing a creative process, and especially with writing, I think writing, you know, it is solitary in some ways, but it's also not. Like, you can't write in a bubble. As writers, it's like we draw from who we are. And I think, you know, it's a constant state of learning. And I'm learning so much from Tab, like with his family, with his growth, with who he is as a native, who he's grown up in his, you know, in the Latin community, in the Latino and Latinx community, like, and all of that we bring to our party. And we are like, let's put all this together and make this amazing, you know, we call it our mythology through music. Because, you know, I grew up on mythology. Like, that was my thing. It
me
was
too.
Like,
I love it.
Right. It was like, I read everything from Italian fables by Capolino. You know, I was reading, that was my book at 9 years old. I didn't have a TV. I was a weird kid. I was reading like the Old Testament, Celtic tales, Norse mythology. Like, that was my jump off that then jumped me into comic books. And I was like, oh my God, like at 10 years old, I was like, I love Marvel comics. My dad's like, go back and read your Norse mythology. I'm like, but I want to read Thor. You know, like, I love Thor. We'll read the real Thor, Dad. You know, like, that was my nerdisms. But I think, you know, it's who we are that we bring to the table, and we bring it in our authentic selves, and then we create it together. And I think that's what makes us, like, I couldn't do this without you, brother.
I know. And honestly, the thing that binds us together is that we're fathers. First and foremost, number one, we make our content so that our kids can embrace it and be inspired by it. Because if our kids are inspired by it, then the world can be inspired by it. And we feel like if we're doing ourselves, if we love it and we're laughing about it, all that matters, dude. It's like when I make music, if I'm jumping around and I'm dancing to it, let's go. That's how the frequency needs to be put out there to the world, because, you know, I vibe off of the things that I create and I want the world to receive that same energy and always create with love. Everything from my music to content to our Marvel comic books, we always create and we lead with love, because that's what we have. We have love for comics. We have love for toys. We have love for horror movies. Like, you know, we grew up on the Clive Barkers and the Halloweens and Freddy Kruegers and the Child's Play. We grew up on all that stuff. But also we grew up on G.I. Joe and Voltron and Thundercats and, you know, the Justice League back in the day. But now we're with Marvel. So now it's the Avengers. So it's like we just always had love for pop culture, cartoons, animation and storytelling.
Well, I think, you know, speaking of that real quick, too, I think, you know, it goes to the love for our own self. Like we've never, you know, people can be like, oh, you're a weirdo. You like toys, like, you know, whatever. And it's like, no, like, I mean, again, like now nerdism has been embraced, but I'm a huge, like I grew up on D&D. I still play it. I run, you know, it's like, I embrace it. I have been doing this since I was
Now I played Magic the Gathering for a little
bit. Oh my God. I have thousands of Magic cards. I have my original beta. Yes. Embrace it. But yeah. I think, you know, it's like when we can embrace that, what, you know, is like that thing that made us who we were when we were 10, 11, 12. Dude, like, Tab was talking about BMX biking. Tab, like, sent me pictures, like, bro, yo.
Well, the thing about it is that I lived through my kids and a lot of the movies that I grew up on, like Back to the Future or, you know, The Goonies or Gremlins or even Rad, which is the movie that came out back in the day. I was a big fan of GT Performer bikes and BMX bikes, but I couldn't afford them. So, you know, my thing was, like, if I can tap into my childhood through my kids, but still relive my childhood now at 45. And I don't mean to date myself, but it's okay. You know, it's like, I feel like this is the world. This is my act too. I'm creating content so my kids could be inspired by. I don't want to just leave a legacy of, I mean, a catalog of music. I want to leave a legacy for my kids to be inspired by. That's my main goal. I did everything in music that you can even think or imagine.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So that reality.
Yeah.
Sorry, just to finish this thought. That reality is something that I lived in the first half of my life. And then I beat cancer and I started dreaming a different dream that goes along with my first dream. But it's like now I only live for my wife and my kids. Like that's my main goal, is every day I think, how can I continue this journey that I started on a solo mission to now piggyback that same energy and that same hunger and that same urgency that I had when I was by myself to create now for my family, my wife and my kids, because that's who I work for. That's my everyday life.
Yeah. Well, and that's like what you said, that's super inspiring because the possibilities are endless. You know, you can't let no or rejection get in your way, you know, and like you said, you've achieved a ton of success, but that doesn't mean you're going to just sit back and be like, all right, I'm good, I'm done. You're like, I want more.
It's not even a monetary thing. It's not even like, oh, I need more money. It's more like, no, I want to create more avenues and more possibilities for others. Cause the success to me is to be able to create the next, you know, the next person that's working at Marvel that is from an indigenous community or from an underserved community.
Yeah.
And we propel that. We're the bridge to that. And we always say that if we can be the studio that is championing new directors, new screenwriters, new artists and illustrators, new musicians, producers, then that's the next vehicle for us to live our next life. Like our act two, as we call it. Because
and that becomes our act three. I mean, we got to build the house. Act three is when we become the mentors. Yeah. Because look, we've both gone through a lot of growth and a lot of, you know, different sort of avenues, you know, and like I said, I mean, it's like I have learned so much on my own personal journey. And it's like I've been a film editor, you know, producer, cartoons, like and now all of a sudden it's going, all right, well, how do we build this together? Because we've got so much in relationships. Because I've always been about building community. like one of the things I'm known for here in Hollywood has been building communities. And I've built a community for comic book animation and film folks and video game as well called Comic Book Sunday. And Comic Book Sunday was really like, I did it for 10 years and it was a networking community, but it became like really a family where all of these people got all these amazing opportunities. I mean, The Witcher literally came out of a party I threw.
Wow.
Because two of my friends, right, like, and the new Final Fantasy is about to come out, it's the same thing. Like, my friend Jason Brown met another cat named Adam Sullivan. Adam Sullivan's the head of legal at Square Enix. Jason Brown ends up becoming a, you know, producing. They had met at the party and they became friends. And then now that's how The Witcher came about. So it's like, I've seen that happen. I've seen platforms get built because you just create a fertile environment for people to come together and be able to be their authentic self and not come in with that, like, what can you do for me? Because Tab and I are never about that. Like, it's never about what can you do for me? It's more about what can we do for you? How do we all fit together? Let's make dope shit. You know, like, that's it. And I think, you know, that's where we come from. And I did the same on the music tip, building a very kind of underground music community that was, it's called Jam Nation. And we get together every month, obviously not with COVID, but we had a residency over at the Rainbow on Sunset Strip. And it was amazing watching, just like, we just threw an open jam and people that were just guests there hanging out, coming in from London, whatever, hanging out, wanting to play guitar, could come into our open jam and play with us. And it was, again, like, Tab and I are all about community. Like, that for us, it's like, it takes a village, you know, all ships rise with the tide, all the different sayings, you know. I think that's really our big, you know, our big thing.
Yeah. Well, I think there's room for everyone. And I think that you just, you know, especially now it's an exciting time because, you know, I get to talk to people like yourselves who are championing, you know, inclusivity and creating more diversity so that every child can read and listen and watch something that they can, you know, relate to and see themselves in. You know, how important is that for you and how many possibilities do you see yourselves, you know, creating in the comic book industry for this, you know, specific story and spinoff stories?
Well, I mean, I'll just jump on that real quick. I mean, I think we can't stop, won't stop is my saying, you know. I was in the chat, he's like, let's go. I'm like, can't stop, won't stop.
Right.
You know? I mean, we are an engine. We are an engine that will continue to move, that will continue to champion, you know, the voices, you know, that need to be championed. And I think, you know, I mean, I speak to my own specific background. I was raised multi-religious. So I had to come to terms with my own sort of sense of spirituality and understanding both culturally and religiously, where do I fit, you know? And I think that's what Tab and I always look at. It's coming into this multiculturalism, multiracial, you know, and creating like a mosaic, as we always say, like, you know, Tab used that word earlier, and that's the word that we always go back to because we find that the word diversity, you know, the word diversity has the word divide in the beginning. It means other,
good point.
And division. So we try to stay away from that word because it really means like, oh, look, everybody's othered. And that's a way for control points to be created for other people to come in and move you around. And it's like, no, we're creating a mosaic. We're creating a tapestry, you know? So that's how we look at everything we do.
Yeah. And honestly, we like to have a modern day approach to everything that we create where, as you mentioned earlier, the word inclusivity is very important to us because, you know, I come from a very mosaic background with the Black Eyed Peas. We have a Filipino, we have an African-American, Native American, and Mexican. So the makeup of our group is very non-traditional. It's different. It's like nothing out there. So we've always had the motto of we are one world, the idea of being able to be the people that can think internationally with our music, but also with our storytelling so that it just doesn't live in one lane. As I mentioned earlier, I want it to be where how Black Panther, although it was a African American superhero and there was African elements to it with Wakanda, I felt connected to it. Even as a Native kid, I felt connected to it. And it spoke to me in many levels because I had never seen a superhero to that caliber where I really connected with. And I love Iron Man, I love Captain America, I love those guys, but I connected with the idea of having a different type of superhero without a cape. a hero that doesn't necessarily look like every other hero. And we wanted to create that same idea and the philosophy of championing communities that don't really have the same seat at the round table. And that being indigenous communities, that being Latino communities, and everybody else that feels like, oh, we don't really have representation the way we should. And that's something that we are very keen on. And we do that with music, you know, like I was very fortunate to have the first Native American group ensemble of seven MCs win a MTV award with the song that we did for Standing Rock. And it was the first time in the history of the MTV awards that there was any Native people, women and men, walking the red carpet to receive an award that was the fight against the system. And that's because we rallied in the troops to be able to stand in solidarity with indigenous and non-indigenous allies to stand against, you know, economic imperialism. And that was the DAPL, that was the Dakota Access Pipeline. And, you know, it just shows that when you bring people together and you act like the conduit to be able to bring all these energies, good things happen to good people. And that was just a way to be able to give back and show that, you know, we work well in numbers and we're always able to change the narrative.
Yeah, that's really powerful. And I just started reading, you know, the first issue of Werewolf by Night. And in the very beginning, you mentioned something, the character mentioned something about one of the white characters in the beginning was saying something about a melting pot, and the female character is like, no, it's a mosaic. And I'd never heard that term before. And, you know, I'm 40, we've used the term melting pot, you know what I mean? And you don't think about it, but I really liked how that changed to the whole idea of a mosaic, you know, like a collage in a sense.
Thank you. That has been something we have been pushing.
We definitely, you see how I catch myself when I'm like,
language is powerful. Language is very, very powerful. And we all know this. And I think, you know, it's very known, especially in indigenous cultures as well. I mean, the power of the spoken word and the power of intention. And I think, you know, a lot of times we lose ourselves in the lack of understanding of what words mean. You know, I mean, I come from, like, my uncle is a linguist. He's like one of the top linguists in the world. And I didn't really know what that meant growing up. But now as an adult, I've been doing a lot of, you know, and being writers, it's like, we need to understand, what does that mean? How does language affect our cognitive thought and the semantics behind it as well? And I think, you know, there is a lot of, for us to be able to, you know, present to people where you don't even realize it. And you're like you said, like, we use the word melting pot, you know, it was growing up, like, you heard that in school. It was like in your history book.
Yeah.
America's a melting pot, you know?
Right.
And I think that, you know, we're going, no, let's find new words, you know, let's find new words and let's embrace them.
Yeah. Well, and a lot of words get lost in translation. I'm a writer myself, and I like to study, like, the etymology of words, like the root of them, where they come from, whether they're Latin or Germanic or whatever. And there's a lot of stuff that actually gets lost in translation, because if you look up the root meanings, they mean completely different things than how we, like, interpret them today, you know?
100%. Yeah. I mean, I think, you know, again, it's like language, the English language, it's a very limiting language as well. And it's a very controlling language. And I think it is, you know, speaking about, you know, language from colonization, I mean, it's a language that, you know, was used to control. And, you know, I mean, yes, we're here with it. And we try to find, you know, the use through its, what are its limitations and what are its positives and things like that. I mean, I wish I spoke more languages. It's not something that I really, you know, really took on. But Tab, I mean, Tab's multilingual. And I think that you can, you know, I think you can speak to that. I mean, what that means and how you think.
So the reality is that growing up in the United States, a lot of times you lose track or you lose connection to your roots if you're multicultural. Mm-hmm. Me being of Native and Mexican descent, growing up in Los Angeles, a lot of times you would get made fun of if you spoke Spanish. They would call you like mojado or wetback or, you know, all these derogatory names that sometimes people that are born in the States, they think that they're better than, you know, our compadres in Mexico. So for me, as I got older, I started learning about both cultures and really embracing both cultures and knowing that my grandmother was my connection to my love and appreciation for my Native culture. But then also knowing that the beauty of me being able to speak Spanish and being bilingual would take me further. Because if you go to different parts of the world and mm-hmm. you're able to speak Spanish, you know, a lot of the times someone in that part of the world is going to be able to speak that same language. And in Spain, it's Castellano. So, you know, I really embraced the idea of wanting to educate myself and wanting to better myself and practice my Spanish. So through the journey of being a Black IP, we always implemented, you know, Latin rhythms, and we collaborated with Latin artists in the past. And now to have our album translation be a body of work where we celebrate and honor the Latino culture by having huge Latin artists like J Balvin, Maluma, Ozuna, and Shakira, mm-hmm. Just to name a few. We just really dove into the love and appreciation for my background as a Latino, as a Mexican American, and just wanting to better my skills in Spanish. I implemented Spanish in some of my verses just to show the world that, you know, we're proud of where we come from, and we're proud that we celebrate and honor both cultures.
Yeah, absolutely. And you've had so much success with the Black Eyed Peas. You've also had personal struggles as well, which you've talked openly about. How do you balance all of that? Like, how do you stay grounded and humble and positive, really, through everything, you know, the ups and the downs and the fame and then the personal struggles? I know you've talked about your battle with cancer and addiction and things like that. How do you stay grounded?
Well, first of all, I have a strong foundation with my wife and my kids. You know, the first and foremost, they are my everyday rock, my stability. Without my wife or my kids, I would not be able to function. I wouldn't be in the place where I'm at as far as my headspace, as far as my balance. My wife is such an inspirational figure in my life because I met her in 1999 before I had anything. Mm-hmm. She was kind of like, I was inspired by her because she had an apartment. She had her thing going on. And here I was, a broke rapper sleeping on my mom's couch. And, you know, my wife saw something in me prior to me seeing that same light in myself. And so, you know, I take the relationship with my wife and my kids as the energy and the fuel to be the person that I am, you know, overcoming addiction. I've been away from that life for 13 years. So sobriety has been a very amazing journey because all the things that are positive and beautiful in my life happen because I'm sober and I'm clear-headed and I'm focused. And then my battle with cancer was something that, you know, it was not in my control, and I did have to go through trauma and trials and tribulations. But at the end, I was able to survive that. And once again, my wife and my kids and my bandmates, my family, my friends. And now this journey with Benny has been such a blessing to me as well. Like, you know, there's never a day that doesn't go by that I don't call him just to hear his spirit, his energy that keeps me motivated, like, you know, his idea, his brain, his genius. Like, this guy is an amazing genius. No, and he's not paying me to say this, ladies and gentlemen. ladies and gentlemen that are tuned into this podcast, I'm speaking from the heart, and I'm saying this man, B. Earl, a.k.a. Benny, has been such a blessing to my survivorship. I've been cancer-free for 6 years. Awesome. And as soon as this man came into my life, besides Will I Am and Apple, I found another spark, something that I'm very passionate about. You know, besides my love for Black Eyed Peas, I have this love for Skyview Way Studios like I've never felt before, because I'm able to create, I'm able to be myself, I'm able to create content that my kids are inspired by. I get to like check in with them like, yo, what do you think of this cartoon? What do you think of this comic book?
Yeah, right.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, man. No, dude, I mean, honestly, bro moment. Like, I've never had any person in my life like Tap. I mean, I'll be honest, like going back to the sobriety, I've quit drinking. I've been sober for 2 years now. And awesome. Honestly, that was a big part because of our journey and our partnership and our friendship and our brotherhood and the love we have together as fathers. I mean, you know, I was in a place too where, you know, I was like, man, I'm not being the dad I want to be. I'm not being the best person I can be. And Tab and I were just starting up. And I was like, you know, I got to be there for Tab. Like, I got to be, you know, obviously I got to be there for my son, but I want to show up every day for Tab just the way I would be showing up for my son. And I don't want to, you know, get lost in that. And I was getting lost in it. And all of a sudden when I did that too, we started selling things. We're saying, you know, we had 2019 was a year of just setting everything up. And then 2020 honestly has been an amazing year for us because we've been developing. We've got 3 cartoons in development right now. We've got a scripted series in development. We're about to be looking to meet with writers in the coming weeks. We've got a feature film, a dance film. You know, Tab was like, I've been wanting to make a dance film.
Yeah, I'm so down for that dance film. I'm a sucker for dance movies. So right. I love to step up and
So go on, yeah.
No. So I was going to just to add on to that. It's like, you know, the trust that Benny has had in me as you know, saying, hey, I want to, you know, be there for you. And every day that you call me, I'm going to answer and we're going to ping pong for 6 times a day or whatever it is. Like I'll call him early in the morning and he's waking up. He's like, what's up, dude? I'm like, yo, Benny, I got this idea. Or he'll call me and be like, hey, I want to run this by you. What do you think of this? But the reality is that we never neglect the beauty and the magic that we're creating together, because you know when you know that it's right, and my wife is a stickler when it comes to like being honest, and she loves and appreciates this energy that I have with Skyview Way. She's like, dude, he brings out the best in you and you bring out the best in him, and I want to champion you guys because I want to support, even though nothing really big has happened yet, it's gonna come. You know, I believe that we were destined to do this. Our partnership with Marvel is just starting. You know, we've had an amazing 2 issues that we put out. Our 3rd one is coming out tomorrow with Werewolf by Night. You know, we did the Marvel 1000 thing. But, the Indigenous Voices, the best is yet to come. We're just chipping away at the idea of being part of the Marvel universe. Like, we are writers that write for Marvel.
and you know what, speaking to our kids, you know, again, it's like everything really is driven by that fact that, you know, we want to be inspiration for our kids, because if we can be inspiration for our kids, we can be inspiration for all kids. Like, that's a big thing, because, you know, I had that dream at 11 years old. I was like, I want to make stuff with Marvel. I wanted to be an artist, but I didn't really follow that path. And it kind of was a dream that fell, you know, by the wayside, because I wasn't really pursuing it. I ended up going, I want to make movies in Hollywood. I want to tell stories. I want to, you know, create content. And, you know, so speaking of that, like, here I am, my son, who's 9 years old, you know, he picked up a copy of Maestro, right? Which is the Hulk Maestro series. So he's like reading it. He's like, he's like, yo, dad, I got the Maestro variant number 1. I turned the page. Guess what I saw? Advertisement, Werewolf by Night.
Yeah.
Like, and he's like, I'm so proud of you, dad. I'm so proud of you guys. And I'm like, here's my 9-year-old son saying that he's proud of us for like what we're doing, and we're inspiring, you know, our kids. Like, that they can have that dream at 9 years old and go, oh my gosh, like, I can really do that. Like, why couldn't I? Why shouldn't I? You know?
Yeah.
Like, and that's it. You know, that's the dream.
And it also sends a message too to like, to everyone, because, you know, we tend to, you know, tell kids, of course, you can do anything, you can be anything. But sometimes when we grow up, you know, and we become adults, we start thinking we're too old for stuff. And I think it's really important that people realize, you know, especially if you're a writer, you know, there's no expiration date for dreams. You know what I mean?
Can I tell you, Melissa, just someone that inspired us on a firsthand about never too old was Stan Lee.
Yeah,
we got the honor to go on a different, you know, tour with him being on the panels with us at New York Comic Con, at San Diego Comic Con, and LA Stan Lee Comic Con. And we were in his presence, absorbing knowledge and information and just peeping his game and wanting to learn and wanting to apply his energy at 90 something years old. Rest in peace.
Wow.
He was still very energetic and enthusiastic about holding on to the imagination and never wanting to grow old, and still being excited about heroes and comic books and toys and everything that embodies your childhood and the nostalgia of your childhood. So if Stan Lee, the great Stan Lee, gave me that energy, you best believe I'm gonna run with that energy and continue that legacy that he started, because now we have the baton to be able to do it on a smaller scale. And I'm not comparing ourselves to Stan Lee at all. just the energy of being in his presence, of learning, of speaking to him one-on-one and getting that, that information of him co-signing the first thing that we did with Master Sun, Black Eyed Peas.
Yeah.
But now like doing that with Benny and having that same energy that Stan Lee exuded and that he, you know, expressed to the world through his storytelling and his love for comics and superheroes.
Well, yeah, Stan, yeah. I mean, Stan's such a great story, you know, because I have such an interesting connection to Stan. So one of my very first mentors in the film business was this guy, Larry Cohen, you know, amazing man, recently passed away, you know, but Larry was also close with Stan. You know, they came up in New York together. And, you know, they also had a very similar kind of mindset. They were very maverick. They were mavericks, you know. And Larry always was like, Ben, come on, just do it. Just, you know, he was very, very independent. He was a big force in my early career, in my early 20s, because I had done a documentary on comic books. And I ended up meeting Stan Lee at Comic-Con in 20, gosh, I mean, it was 2002. I'm like 22, you know, no, it was like 2002, 2001. And I end up sitting next to Stan Lee and Gil Champion, his business partner. And here I am, a kid who's got like a film under, you know, literally in my backpack that we're going to be screening at Comic-Con, this documentary. And, you know, he was in the doc, but I didn't get to go to fly to LA to shoot it. I was shooting all the New York interviews. And I did all the editing for the film. And, you know, I introduced myself and it was just like one of those like fanboy dream moments. But then, you know, obviously having been later connecting with Larry Cohen and him and Stan Lee, you know, it was just that same kind of New York mentality. I mean, mm-hmm. comic books only recently have really become, you know, obviously in the 90s, of course, but I think Marvel in what it is really blew up, you know, because of that big vision. But Stan never gave up on that vision. Like he always had that vision since he was always doing comics. And, you know, I have another friend, you know, my buddy Dave Uslan, his father, Michael Uslan, is the one who did Batman. And he was the one who championed Batman and pushed, and he has the rights to Batman. If you every Batman project you ever look at, it says Michael Uslan on it. And David's a good friend of mine. And, you know, looking at all these people that I've come up with, and you know, in the film business and everything, it's just, it's watching how we all, you know, are just championing our dreams, mm-hmm. you know? And like you said, it's like, you can never, I mean, here I am at 40 years old, you know, and it's like just starting on this dream journey, yeah. you know, just starting, you know, and that's so inspiring. I mean, it's like, you never yeah. have to get old.
Yeah.
It's yeah. funny because you never know where the inspiration is going to come from. Mm-hmm. You know, another person besides Stan Lee that inspired me with their act too was the late great, rest in peace, Kobe Bryant. Mm. You know, who was a yeah. personal friend of mine and my family and his family, and to see life beyond basketball and what he was as a husband and as a father and as a, you know, championing of storytelling through a lens of like wanting to empower girls because he had daughters and he was a girl dad, and doing it through a sports lens, you know, for me, and adding fantasy to it, for me, I always looked at Kobe as a person to be inspired by, but also to champion, to want to live up to those expectations of like, you know, life beyond my day job, which is Black Eyed Peas. And I love my day job. I love being a Black IP, but also like there's more story to tell and there's more things that my kids can really gravitate to. And that's why I was like, man, Stan Lee and Kobe Bryant have been two big forces in my life.
They're good heroes.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, no, Kobe Bryant, that was, yeah, I didn't know he was a friend of yours. That was a super crazy tragedy. Very,
yeah.
you know, it's just always when it takes you by surprise like that, you know, and it literally rocked the nation, the world,
rocked
you know,
the world.
Everybody yeah, felt definitely. that loss. Yeah. But you're absolutely right. He was, him and Stan Lee both were just so inspiring. Just what they did beyond, like you said, beyond the initial, you know, just whatever their day job was and how they reached mm-hmm. so many people, inspired so many people. And I think you guys are on your way, you know, to doing that as well. With the stuff you're doing and the way that things are changing too, there's so many indie comics now, you know, Kickstarter campaigns, and people that don't feel like they can get a seat at the table are like, you know what, I'm going to take it on my own and do this my own way, you know, self-publish it. And that's, you know, huge as well. Have you guys ever thought about completely just doing something on your own? Like with your...
I mean, I've already done... I did the very first Hollywood Kickstarter here. I did. Yeah. We were the very first Kickstarter ever featured in Hollywood Reporter because of the cast we got. I did it with Titmouse Animation Studios and John Schnapp, and it was a cartoon. We raised $190,000. I brought in my friend Lena Headey to star. She was in... So Lena is a very close friend who I was like, hey, Lena, you know, I got this like cartoon we're putting together. We're raising the money on Kickstarter. Are you down to do the main character's voice? And she's like, yeah, sure, whatever. I was like, okay, cool. So we put this amazing cast together and we had Titmouse Animation Studios and we made the cartoon. We just did it. And we raised 100, like I said, we raised 190 grand. It was the hardest 45 days of my life. I was also going through a divorce at the time and I had a 10-month-old son. So, you know. But yeah, it is a challenging possibility. And I think I would always encourage anyone to do it, especially if it's a project they believe in and that doesn't fit into kind of the current, you know, I don't know, temperature of what's going on, you know, where you really kind of want to be your own machine. And it's amazing. I mean, look, when we got made the money, it was us. Me and John were like in the studio every day going, all right, what are we doing? It's our money. Like, let's go make a card. So yeah, personal experience, but it's a lot of work.
Yeah. I would say this just to have a, you know, a perspective from a person that has been part of a major label for many years and then, you know, getting kicked off or getting let go and then getting signed by another major label and knowing how the machine works and the power of association and affiliation, being part of, you know, the Marvel arm has been such a blessing, you know, and without that flexing, you know, and yes, you have to flex, you have to have that partnership where it's like indie. I respect that, but I love the idea of having such a global partner like Marvel and being able to say, look, you know, we know that it's going to come out, or we know that we have a better chance at whatever success is, whatever, you know, it's going to get in the right places. For me, that's just been my personal experience on the Music Tip. Like I try to do stuff independently on the Music Tip and it didn't have that same velocity and that same urgency that when you're part of a major label and you have a machine, an actual machine behind you that, you know, it moves fast. And unless you're putting up the capital and you have, that's your money that you're willing to spend and take a gamble on, you know, then that, you know, go be about it. But I would prefer,
I would prefer
to be partnered up with some mega monsters.
Totally right there with you. Yeah.
We had an amazing cast. We had Chris Hardwick on it in the cartoon. Cool. One of the voices, like it was an amazing, and honestly, you don't know about it. I put this, you know, like me and Schnepp put this amazing, God rest, you know, Schnepp's soul. I mean, love that man. And, you know, he's gone too soon. And he was a brilliant, another genius that, you know, unfortunately the cartoon didn't work. It didn't catch on. It was something that, you know, and I've been there and I've seen that disappointment that we had. And if only, you know, we had had the machine of a Warner Brothers or a Disney or whatever behind us. Now, again, some people really want to do it their way. And John was very much like that. John, and I respect John 100%. He was always, John did many Kickstarters, you know, he did, and he had very great success with them. And it works for a certain personality. Tab and I are here to work with the machines to make them how we want to tell our stories in the machines.
And we have great partners. Like, you know, I have to say that the vision that we had going into creating Werewolf by Night, it's exactly the way we designed it from scratch when it was just a conversation.
100%. We told the story we wanted to tell.
We told the story we wanted to tell. We got the right artist, Scott Eaton, to visually, you know, let the world know what was inside of our heads and how we created the story and our villains, and everything was dead on.
That's awesome. And, you know, so earlier you guys mentioned Masters of the Sun. So hip hop played a big role in that story. are there? I'm curious, did you guys have any musical influences for Werewolf by Night? Like, did you have playlists that you listened to?
Oh, yeah. I'll talk about playlists. I'll let Tab jump in that. His Tab is like, yo, bro. He's like, yo, I got another playlist.
Some things that has been a personal connection to our creation and how we create is the fact that we have a musical component that goes along with the experience. You know, using our strength, using our weapons that we already have in the game, which is the music component, and being able to create, you know, original songs for our cartoons and our animation, but also creating playlists that inspire the writers or the animators to go on this journey. And we had different playlists that were part of the Werewolf by Night journey. And I felt like different moods would evoke different experiences mm-hmm. and different type of coloring and animation, and just that was the way that we can incorporate music to be part of this journey. And Werewolf by Night, if you look at the comic, he's listening to, I don't know if it's like a musical MP3 player that
she's got the iPad and she's got his headphones in, and she's controlling his playlist.
So that's how, you know, he's listening to Chop Suey by System of a Down. The music has always been part of our journey, and we just want to continue that idea, because we always say music through mythology or mythology through music. It's part of our strength, and we always want to implement that, whether it's original music for scoring or a playlist that we create on Spotify.
Yeah, that's cool. I think music goes hand in hand with everything, really. I mean, if any type of art, whether you're painting or writing, I mean, I'm just speaking from experience, I guess, but I think that music really does inspire and sort of like boost the creative juices. You know what I mean? Because like if I'm blocked with writing, I just put on a playlist and it can put me in that mood right away to write.
You know what's crazy, Melissa, is that in 2000, from 2011 until 2000, I want to say maybe 15 or 16, I spent like those years creating music that I thought I was going to release a solo project, but I never did. But I held on to those songs in my hard drive and I revamped them to kind of to be tailored to each of our cartoons that we created that we have like a reimagined version of something that I created in the past that kind of goes along with our storytelling and theme songs and possible songs that we could have throughout the cartoons.
Cool. Music for both of us, I think, has always been something that speaks to us. I mean, I've been playing music since I was 13. I'm a bass player and, you know, and I love it. I'm not a professional, but I play it. I love it. And there's a passion for it. And I think for both of us, we speak through music. I mean, we speak, you know, Tab will send me a song and be like, yo, check out this vibe. What do you think? Or he'll send me, you know, and be like, yo, that sounds dope. Like, and I think that is like our fluidity comes from almost a jazz style. I mean, I love playing jazz, you know, because it for me is something where we create, we're creating together. I mean, that's why, like, even with our music thing that we were doing, you know, on Sunset Strip, we were just getting a jam. Like, we'd be like, pull out a key. All right, cool. What's the tempo? Get our drummer on it. Click, clack, click, clack, and tick, tack. And then we're just like feeling it. And that's how Tab and I work. We feel it. We just go with it. And if it doesn't feel right, like he said earlier, if we're not laughing, if we're not high-fiving through the phone or through the Zoom, you know, it's not going in. And, you know, look, we're not always right, but we're doing it from the heart. And that's all we can do.
And the cool thing is that, like, we don't have an ego about listening to each other. And like, if we feel strong about something, and Benny will say like, nah, I'm really not feeling that. And then we'll go through this. Why not? Maybe. Mm-hmm. And then finally we resolve and say, yeah, you're right. Okay. I get it. Agreed. Like that. We always know it's that easy. We can depend on each other to not have an ego, not take it personal if we don't agree on something. You know, yesterday we had a conversation about something and, you know, it was as easy as, okay, cool. We set our points and we know each other so well that by the end of that conversation or that end of that thread, we know that we're going to come to a common ground and really agree on the final decision.
Yeah. Well, like you were saying earlier, it's about the relationships, you know, that you build. It sounds like you guys were like meant to be, you know, destined to be together.
Well, you know, I absolutely agree about that. I mean, I think, you know, I've been learning so much about just like, you know, surrender to the universe, so to speak. Mm-hmm. I mean, I think it really is something where, you know, if anything 2020 has taught us is that just expect the unexpected and just let go. I mean, control is an illusion. And if, you know, when the right person comes to your life, you know it. and you just have to go with it. And you got to trust. I mean, I think trust, that's the biggest thing. I mean, I'm learning that for myself. Like Tab teaches me to trust myself because he believes in what I'm saying and what I'm doing. And I do the same. I'm like, yo, that's brilliant, bro. Like, yo, that's a genius idea. Let's go with that. Like, you know, and I think that's the thing. It's like, when we know, we know. And when there's something that's like not sticking, we go, all right, why is that not working? You know, or why, how do we present it back to our editors, or how do we present it to our, you know, executives? And then we build our front, and then we come back and say, all right, well, this is where we are, you know? Yeah. And I think that's the most healthy. Look, we both have been, you know, we're both married. I am no longer married, but I love my ex-wife and we have an amazing, healthy relationship. Okay. She is awesome. And she's an amazing mother. And I'm forever blessed to have her in my life because she is raising our son to be a wonderful child. And I think Tab and I, you know, we take those relationships, like Tab says with his wife, like we bring those relationships to our relationship that becomes that same thing of like, all right, we got to trust each other and go together.
And it's as easy as like taking the philosophy that I have on stage when I'm performing, you know, it's like fearlessness. The, you know, I like to take the Mamba mentality as Kobe Bryant did. He would go into his games with that killer mentality and, you know, take the last 3 second shot. And that's how I feel like what I do in my day job is like, I love to be under pressure when I'm on stage, whether it's 1,000 people, 100,000 people or 5 people in the audience. Like, I love that feeling. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, what I bring to the table is I bring that reassurance and that comfort for Benny when he's feeling a little uncomfortable and he's like, I don't know if I'm going to take that 3 second shot. I'm like, no, take the shot, do it. And that's the thing that he's so in his own head sometimes because of his genius that he gets in his way. And I'm like, no, Benny, you got to do this. Let's go, bro. You can do it. You know,
I know.
Yeah, it's hard to get out of your own head. I mean, you have that imposter syndrome a lot. You know, I've written some books, I've published books, and I've had, you know, a little success on an indie level. But yeah, you still have those moments when you sit down to write a new book where you're like, oh my God, how do I do this? You know what I mean? Like, you just, it's that doubt that creeps in, and you got to just champion over it and kind of be like, no, I got this. You know what I mean?
Yeah, 100%. I think it really comes down to trust the process. You know, and when you have amazing champions in your corner that trust you, surround yourself by those that light you up. Because if you're not getting lit up by the people in your corner, if you're not getting lit up, you know, we don't want to be, you know, nobody needs extra toxicity in this world because the world is already toxic enough in LA and you're already choking on some air. You know, we don't need to be choking on each other's air, you know, like.
That's a great analogy. Yeah.
Totally. It really is. I mean, you want to be on the phone call with that person that's going to go, I believe in you. Like, you got this. Don't even sweat it. Like, and vice versa. And you want to have that, like Tab said earlier, it's like, come from love. Like, it's not some corny thing. Like, that's it. Full stop. Come from love. Like, that builds happiness. And then that builds everything else in your life. And when you can do that and put that into your content, into your music, like Tab does, into our stories, like we do, then the audiences are going to feel that. And yeah, it, you know, there is no such thing as a perfect song or a perfect story or perfect whatever, but as long as it connects to the right people and moves them, like Tab says, it's got, you know, it's like dance, right? It's got to move.
Exactly, dude. It's got to move the crowd.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, and also, you know, another thing I wanted to touch on with you, Tabu, is that you've utilized your platform, and we've mentioned this briefly, but to bring awareness and activism for your community. And, you know, for people listening, like, what are some of the things that fans and listeners can do to help contribute, you know, to that message of the Native American community and getting that message out there?
Well, first and foremost, we are here. You know, a lot of people have a misconception that we're so disconnected with modern times that people around the world don't know what a modern day Native looks like, but we are definitely represented in a modern day way. You know, there's a lot of reservations where, you know, the idea that you can be of service and champion movements and causes a lot of times gets lost in translation because there's been such an intergenerational trauma throughout the years that the trust to outsiders and to allies that are just trying to help sometimes comes with a price. Sometimes it comes like, oh, well, what are their intentions? What are they trying to get out of us? You know, and I've felt that before, and I'm, you know, Native as well, but you know, it comes with being able to do your part, whatever that means, you know, whether it's GoFundMe that a lot of different tribes have, or just wanting to learn about, you know, indigenous communities around your area, what land, you know, are you sitting on? Like, for example, I'm in Los Angeles, and the land that's the ancestors are from the Tongva land. So just knowing where the first people of wherever you reside, to understand that ancestry and the history of that place, so that you could better understand your surroundings and what was here prior to you living in this house. So, you know, there's those type of ways. There's organizations like Illuminative, at Illuminative, where you can get information about senses and the way that you can be of service in different ways, whether it was voting last voting election. Mm-hmm. And there's ways for you to just do your part.
Well, I think education is the biggest thing. I mean, I think, you know, even here I am, you know, as a Native ally and, you know, your, you know, creative half, and I'm on this journey too. You know, I am a student, and, you know, it's a constant being open-minded, being a student, going out and, you know, look, there's some, you know, Joseph Campbell has a great series called The Power of Myth. And there's a lot of amazing, you know, Native storytelling that he gets into and ties it into modern mythology as well as global mythology. And as we always talk about, it's about an international community voice that we're always looking to put out with our company, but it's always coming from where are the first people's voices? Where are the people that are most connected to the earth? Like, I mean, Tab, you always say it, like your grandmother with the keep your feet in the earth, you know?
Yeah, and honestly, I would suggest this as well to all the people that want to learn and educate themselves. You got to find the right people to kind of speak on that, because a lot of times we have a westernized narrative that has a lot of misconceptions, has a mm-hmm. lot of very huge stereotypes and typical stereotypes that wouldn't necessarily do well when having a conversation with a Native that is on an Indian reservation. You know, it's just getting that information. Even for myself, I'm still a student of wanting to learn about my cultures and wanting to make the right decisions and follow the right protocol for my behalf. Because even when it comes to storytelling, like there's a lot of landmines, as we talk about, mm-hmm. that we have to be sensitive and empathetic when speaking on Native issues and Indian reservations and storytelling, because there's a lot of things that we don't know, because we were born in the city of, I was born in LA, Benny's from New Jersey. So yep. Here we are telling stories about Native people from Indian reservation.
Well, and I think to that point, it's like we are always coming from a humble space of going, look, we want to learn. You know, we bring in the right allies and the right people.
Exactly.
Like, you know, J.C. Shelton, you know, who gave, you know, so we spoke to, you know, on the phone many times about, you know, and also took visual inspiration from him and incorporated into Werewolf by Night, you know, Ben Schilling and Dolores Schilling. You know, have been amazing, you know, guides for us on this journey and so many others. I mean, you know, Crystal Echo Hawk, right? I mean, it's like,
yeah, exactly.
There's so many amazing, you know, people that have believed in us as well. And, you know, and we're not scared to ask the questions. Like Tab said, mm-hmm. it's like,
and we're not the experts.
We're not.
We never claim to be experts at Native storytelling. We never claim to be experts to Native issues, because, like, honestly, I would be a hypocrite if I acted like I knew everything, and it would be, yeah. I would do ultimate injustice if I was claiming to be the all-knowing. And there's a line that Kyrie Irving said. He said, "I'm a voice. And I don't speak for all of us. I just speak as one of us." And that line, that phrase has been with me since I heard it, because I always feel like in pop culture, if you have a direct line to indigenous communities and you have the trust, if you're able to do good and just want to go from the heart, then it'll be implemented and people will see that. But if you have ulterior motives, people will see right through that too. So, you know, with our storytelling, we always try to advocate for Native artists like Jeffrey Varegi to be part of our projects. We have cultural consultants, as Benny mentioned, like J.C. Shelton and Vince mm-hmm. Schilling, so that we're always making sure that we dot our I's and cross our T's so that it's bulletproof.
Yeah. No, I mean, I think, you know, when it comes to our storytelling, we're not going in and saying we're going to tell a specific native story about, you know, this authentic voice from a living on a reservation. You know, we will give that as a framework, but our goal is to speak metaphorically. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, Werewolf by Night, you know, for instance, like, right, there's, I mean, I don't know if you've read issue 1 and 2 yet, but so in Werewolf by Night issue 2, we find out that there, well, in issue 1, we actually find out that there is these missing, you know, youth and, mm-hmm. and native folk. And honestly, that comes from, you know, I mean, I had heard about the Highway of Tears, mm-hmm. and, you know, how many missing women, you know, wow. go every year and how horrible that is. And we didn't want to go, okay, we're going to tell that story, but we made an allusion to it by using that, where it was this thing of like this invisible no more, like
right.
here are these people being taken because this greater power is saying they don't matter. We're going to take them because no one will miss them. And we put that as a metaphor in there so that when people read it, they'll understand the metaphor, number one. But if they do a little bit of research, they'll realize, oh my God, that's real. That's yeah. the Highway of Tears.
Yeah, like,
these are real things that we're speaking to, right? I mean, that's what we want to do is create allusions to, you know, real topics that people can actually edutain themselves on and get real education.
Yeah, and I think that's really good because, yeah, that's a really big issue that, you know, is nobody seems to be paying attention to. It doesn't make headlines. You know, the only time I've ever seen articles on it is when someone's posted it on Facebook and it's like, hey, pay attention mm-hmm. to this. You know, so that's a problem, you know, that it's not on CNN, you know?
We had that same issue with Standing Rock, you know, and there was some allies that came to try to bring their weight and their accessibility to bring the media outlets to that. And there was people like Shailene Woodley and Leonardo DiCaprio and Mark Ruffalo, who are A-list celebrities in Hollywood, and they were using their celebrity and their voice to be able to bring light to what was happening at Standing Rock. And they were doing it from the heart. And the fact was, is we needed more visibility. And even me going to Standing Rock and being there in the trenches and in the front lines with my relatives, mm-hmm. I felt like empowered. I felt like this was my calling because I was dealing with, you know, life after cancer and my own healing process and reconnecting with my roots. And it just showed the power of solidarity and the power of being of service.
Yeah, absolutely. And I'm a champion for all women too. You know what I mean? I just think that women, especially, and we need male allies, you know, champion for all women and all, you know, ethnicities and everything, but specifically that issue of, you know, the missing Native American women that go missing, like,
well,
literally all the time. And no one goes looking.
A lot of our storytelling has women always because of my grandmother, you know, matriarch, like the first mm-hmm. person that put me on the map was grandma. So that idea and that philosophy of having strong female figures, and especially me having my wife and my daughter, like we always implement somebody. One, there's got to be a female that is as strong and as driven as the male lead because we want to empower women as well. The matriarchs.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, before we go, I want you to talk about Flow Water because we talked about it a little bit. So yes. I'm excited about this. But yeah, yeah, let's talk about it.
So I partnered up with Flow, this amazing company from Canada. They are alkaline spring water, and they are, you know, their messaging, it goes along with my own messaging about, you know, wanting to be part of always giving back, but also being connected to Mother Earth and how water is life. That was the term that we used at Standing Rock. And they have the same idea of, you know, wanting to utilize the water as a healing, as a form of paying homage to the tribal communities that embrace that philosophy. And so for me, it just made sense. The partnership was great. I'm an investor in it. I'm a shareholder, but also I'm an ambassador. And so, you know, if you look on my IG page, I'm really running on advocating for it. And I've gotten it out to all my friends. Definitely send you guys some just so that you could try it. It's got different flavors. It's alkaline water and it's sustainable because it's in a box as opposed to a plastic container.
It's delicious. I mean, mint cucumber, bro, is the best.
Ladies and gentlemen, and I'm proud of it. You know, besides being a comic book writer, besides being a co-creator with Benny on our animation and being a Black IP, I got into the water business and it's been a blessing because water is life.
Yeah. Absolutely. That's exciting. I mean, you guys are both amazing people. Thank you so much for being on today. Like literally super genuine. Just thanks for being so like forthcoming with everything and just sharing your passion with all of us too. Like that's very apparent. You guys are very passionate about what you do.
Thank you. I want to plug something. So tomorrow, I don't know if the podcast is going out tomorrow, but
December 30th,
we have the new Werewolf by Night, issue 3. It's dropping. We're proud of that. And then in January, we'll have issue 4. Yes. Then we're going to have our trade that comes out what, Benny?
I think it's March. I think the trade drops in March, which is going to be around. So we've also got another project. We can't talk too much about it, but our trade comes out in March. We're just lining up with Marvel. Kashala, we've got a new Ghost Rider. Speaking about women, empowering women, we have an awesome, amazing story we've been building that is just amazing, powerful women. And, you know, we are drawing from our, you know, our matriarchs to channel that with our amazing editor, Sarah, you know, and just really building something really special there. So.
Awesome.
Yep. Yeah. And then we have an amazing, you know, three cartoons, animation series that are in development right now. We're excited about that. As Benny mentioned, a scripted one that's coming as well. And then we have
our feature film we're developing too. So, you know, look out for 2022. This is going to be 2022 is going to be a big year for Skyview Way. We're putting it out there. Dream big.
and then on a smaller scale, we got this song that we just dropped with Shakira called Plug In My Small Little So I got this small song with Shakira called Girl Like Me that is really taking off. And hopefully, start getting into the dance on TikTok or that's on Spotify now. It's on iTunes, Apple Music, all the streaming services. Check out our new video on YouTube. It's called Girl Like Me featuring Shakira.
Awesome. Oh my gosh. Thank you guys so much. So we've got the support your local comic book shops too, people. Like, don't forget that. Like you guys, absolutely. You're available in all local comic book shops, right? And if you're not, people can call and get it.
That is true. All local comic book shops, you know, here in LA, we've got a bunch that we go to, we love, you know. I always give a shout out to the homies at We Can Be Heroes Comics. We also got Collector's Paradise, who we're doing some signings with. I think you can still order a full series of our signed books. We've been signing with Collector's Paradise, and they'll ship that out to you, I think, all 4 issues. So, you know, support your local comic shops. And
also thank you to our Marvel family, CB. We got Jake Thomas, Shannon B. We have Lindsay. What's your last name?
Kohick. Yeah.
Kohick. Sure. Scott Eaton, Merzloff. We have Sarah B.
Scott Hanna.
Yeah, Scott Hanna.
So
we always got to show love to our Marvel family. Thank you guys. To my bro, Joey Q, Joey Quesada, Jason Latorre, and Daniel Fink for being part of that journey.
Awesome. Thank you guys for coming on. Seriously, Taboo, Benjamin, this has been amazing. Werewolf by Night. Everybody go buy it. I just bought it. It's amazing so far. Yeah, no, awesome. Have a good night, guys. Thank you so much for coming on.
And we're back. Just getting ready to say, and
we're back.
Exactly. What'd you think?
That was great, man. When Jeff told us we booked this one, I was like, man, that's going to be awesome. Because there's always some like comic book spin to why certain people will come on. And even if there wasn't a comic book spin to this one, it'd be cool to talk to Taboo about what all things done.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm curious on what the other, because Will I Am did a comic book a couple years ago.
Yeah. Yeah. He did a pretty successful one too.
Yeah. So I don't know. It was pretty cool. I was excited. I wish I could have been there.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, next time we'll have him come back on, you know, next time we talk to him.
Yeah. Makes me want to go. That's the thing, check, man.
It's a thing. Maybe if you listen to like people who listen to our show, we have really good interviews with people. Our interviews aren't the normal interviews out there. So people want to come back on. So it's great.
That's right. That's right. And people should, you know, you guys should be sharing us with your friends because we're that good.
Yeah. We are that good. Guaranteed. Guaranteed. There's one episode of our show that you like.
At the Charrette race.
This is a money back guarantee. However much money you spend on our episode, which is $0, I would guarantee you that there's one of the 550 episodes.
I like how you had to put in, which is $0.
Yeah.
While you're explaining it, it's a money back guarantee, which is $0, but it's there.
Well, I'm smart enough to know that someone goes, hey, man, I spent X number of dollars buying an iPod, listening to your podcast. You owe me that back. No. I specified $0. So.
I mean, you can slap a guarantee on the side of the box, but it's still a piece of shit inside, isn't it?
That's right. That's right. Ah, Tommy Boy. Love that movie.
Tommy want wingy. Tommy hungy.
Housekeeping.
Oh, man. I watched Anchorman last night.
Oh, yeah?
I love that show. Oh, yeah, man.
I haven't watched Anchorman in years. So.
Yeah, either have I. I was giggling before things were happening. I love that movie. All right.
San Diego.
Yeah, San Diego. Scholars contend that they've lost the meaning of it many years ago. It means a whale's vagina. No, anyway, that's not right.
Enough of that. Thank you, Tabu, for coming on and coming on talking about World Open Eye and everything else you talked about. I mean, it was great. I hope they come back on sometime and talk about more stuff. This one I was excited for because anytime we can mix two of my loves, which is music and comics, I'm super happy. I'm super excited for that episode.
Right? I mean, it's always a fun time. So,
yeah.
There you guys go. All right. If you guys enjoyed that, which if you made it this far, you must have. So, why don't you go to spoilerverse.com and check out all our other stuff that we have to offer? There's so many other podcasts and so many other back issues of this podcast that it'll blow you away with the people that we have. And
yeah,
why not do that?
Do that and check out Funny Book Forensics because that's a good show that needs to get some spotlight on because they put out some quality content every time that they release.
Quality.
And, check out our podcasts and we already said that, our reviews, our previews, our articles, all that fun stuff we have coming out. Go to the store, buy a t-shirt hoodie, look fly as hell. Come join us on Discord, scpod.us/Discord, and come chat it up and have some fun.
There you guys go. All right, guys.
That's a show.
That is a show. And we're out of here, right?
We're out.
All right, don't forget. In oceans of podcasts, we are Cthulhu. As Cthulhu compels you to do, open the mind and read more. All right. That's good. I'm glad we got that done.